You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to John and Gordy in the Morning. The guys are off today, but they're back this afternoon at 2 from 2 to 5, so you can catch them then. But for now, you got me, Matt Rothschild, and Dom, our great producer and engineer this morning. How you doing, Dom?
Not too bad. Not too bad. The roads are just awful. Just awful.
Yeah, surprisingly still a little dicey out there. They were dicey in Madison downtown last night. I was trying to parallel park on Butler Street, and that was a really tricky proposition.
I can't parallel park no matter what. Like, you know, that's when I took my driver's test years back, that was the one thing I got off was parallel parking. Everything else I did perfect, but I can't parallel park.
Oh, there was some funny bit in a movie where a guy and his girlfriend are having a fight, and so he walks out and in a rage and says, "I'm just going to go practice parallel parking for an hour." Crack me up. But the road's coming in today. I come in from the south of Madison and merging onto 14. You know, cars are coming at you at 75 miles an hour. I'm trying to get on this ramp here, which is icy and dicey, and so I can't speed up to get to a decent merge speed. So it's a little tricky out there. So if you're driving and still not quite clear, the roads in Madison or leading to Madison, so be careful. Don't get in a car accident. It's not worth it.
And I actually have a little story about that, Matt, real quick. I said this yesterday, but I also during the Thanksgiving weekend, you think it was Saturday morning, I got into a car accident.
You did, really?
What happened? Car on car, but I did a full 360 on the expressway.
Oh, God.
Yep, and I rammed into the barrier, and my back right bumper is just destroyed now.
You were able to drive away, though?
Yep, able to drive away, and yesterday I got new tires, so I should be good.
I'm getting new tires on Friday. That must have scared the bejesus out of you, though.
Yeah, it really did. I luckily, I was the only one in the car, so I was the only one that freaked out. I didn't freak anyone else out, but situation.
You could have got killed, though.
Yeah, yep.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you're here. It's always fun working with you. And we've got a great show today at 6:35. We've got one of the Starbucks strikers right here in the studio. They've been out picketing downtown Madison. Her name's Allie Kerr. At 7:05, Joanna Bennett will join us. She used to be on the Common Council here in Madison. Now she's running for the Assembly. Then we got Pulitzer Prize winner David Marinus coming in at 7:30. Can't wait to talk with David Marinus, one of the best writers in America. And finally, Liz from Serenity Pet Spa. So it's going to be fun. Of course, we'll have time to talk politics and birds. You can call in anytime with your bird sighting or bird question or your political grievances at 608-879-8255. That's 608-879-8255 right here on WMDX, or you can text us at the same number. Always nice to have conversation with folks out there about what's going on in our world and what's going on in birdland. But usually we do the bird discussion toward the end of the show, but the show's so packed, we'll probably get to it this half hour, Dom. And also, I always try to bring a poem to the air when I'm on, because it just gives another dimension to things. And so why don't we do the poetry right now, since we're crowded at the end of the show. So this is how I found this poem. It's a poem called Blizzard.
Okay.
Obviously, on Saturday, it was coming down like crazy, and I was looking for a snow poem. Of course, there's the obvious Robert Frost snow poem that I didn't want to read, because we're all taught that in school, and it's kind of a cliche. So I was looking for something better, and I found this really neat poem by a poet whose work I only faintly knew. Her name is Linda Paston. She was the poet laureate of Maryland in the 90s. She's not with us anymore, but her poem, Blizzard, is with us, and it's only about a minute and a half long by my slow reading, so let's rip and read here. This is Blizzard from Linda Paston. The snow has forgotten how to stop. It falls, stuttering at the glass, a silk windsock of snow blowing under the porch light, tangling trees which bend like old women snarled in their own knitting. Snowdrifts up to the step over the door sill. A pointillist's blur, the wetting of form and motion, shaping itself to the wish of any object it touches. Chairs become laps of snow. The moon could be breaking apart and falling over the eaves, over the roof. A white bear shaking its paw at the window, splitting the hive of winter. Snow stinging in the air. I pull a comforter of snow up to my chin and tumble to sleep as the whole alphabet of silence falls out of the sky. I just think that's a cool poem.
Yeah.
I love the old women knitting image. I love the snow, the white comforter she pulls over herself, which is like snow. The poem again is Blizzard. The poet Linda Paston, former poet laureate of Maryland. That's Paston, if you want to look it up. P-A-S-T-A-N. So that's our poetry for the day. Let's start talking a little politics. I have a couple notes of history. Today is International Day for the Abolition of Slavery. There are an estimated, this is a United Nations day, there's an estimated 50 million people in modern slavery, including 28 million in forced labor and 22 million in forced marriage. Some are in are exploited sexually. That's the Epstein scandal. So this is a day to talk about that, too, if you want to talk about that. Also, on this date in 1859, abolitionist John Brown was hanged. And most pertinently, in 1823, on this date, President Monroe declared the Monroe Doctrine, asserting U.S. dominance throughout the Americas. So here we are, 202 years later, and Donald Trump is continuing in that inglorious tradition. I remember in his second inaugural address, he talked about Manifest Destiny. I mean, this guy is still doing it, though he's, should be noted, not an exception. U.S. presidents from Monroe on down have been acting like the Western Hemisphere is our little sandbox. That's what Trump is doing now with Venezuela. It's what he's doing with those boats. I mean, the big story of the last 48 hours is this Hegseth story, kill everyone on the boat, including the people who are just hanging on. Yesterday, the Trump administration, including Hegseth and Carolyn Leavitt, started to spin that it was all the admiral's fault. Here's what Hegseth said, even though the Washington Post had reported that he said kill everyone. Hegseth yesterday, Admiral Mitch Bradley is an American hero, a true professional, and has my 100% support. I stand by him and the combat decisions he has made on the September 2nd mission. That is knifing his admiral in the back. It's quite astonishing the way they throw people overboard there. The interesting thing, you know, I was listening to John Gordy in the afternoon while I was driving around yesterday. And John pointed out something that I hadn't heard before, which was that Lawrence Tribe had posted something from the Department of Defense, now the War Department, Law of War Manual. Tribe, who was a Harvard law professor, highlighted a section of the war manual that outlines the requirement for service members to refuse illegal orders. And the key example, according to Lawrence Tribe, in that manual was orders to fire upon the shipwrecked. And of course, the two people there who were knocked off on the second strike were shipwrecked. And I'm not going to, I don't want to use that expression that people have been using, double tap. These are euphemisms for war crimes. And let's not make a euphemism and just use this new phrase just because it's kind of cool to use the new phrase. I'm not going to do that. This was a second strike on people who were shipwrecked. It was obviously in violation of the law of war. The whole enterprise of hitting these boats is illegal under U.S. law and under international law. So, you know, at some point, these folks need to be held accountable. Donald Trump has immunity from the U.S. Supreme Court. He may not have immunity from the International Criminal Court. Hegseth certainly doesn't. So that is one story that's caught my eye. And if you want to weigh in on that story, if you're listening and you have your own ideas, the number to call, 608-879-8255. The other story that caught my eye over the last couple days that I think is just reprehensible is this story about the college student who's trying to get home for Thanksgiving, who is grabbed and deported. let me just read a little bit. A 19-year-old college student was about to board a flight to surprise her family for Thanksgiving when she was detained at Logan International in Boston and deported to Honduras 2 days later. The student was brought by her parents from Honduras to the U.S. when she was 7. Her lawyer said that she had been deported, check this out, in violation of a court order that a federal judge signed on Friday that said she couldn't be removed from the U.S. while her case was pending. And yet the next day she was removed. This is, again, the Trump administration totally ignoring judges' orders, acting illegally, and sending this poor student who was studying business at Babson College in Wellesley, Mass., out of the country against judge's orders. Just outrageous.
And you think, you know, she finished all of her finals, she was ready to go home, and she was super happy, and then that happens. It's just awful.
It's appalling. It's appalling what this government is doing, how they are trampling on our civil rights and our civil liberties, how they are scapegoating immigrants. I mean, Trump, after that Afghan refugee who had worked with the CIA shot the 2 National Guardsmen, Trump has just gone nuts over anyone who's coming into the country, extrapolating from that one person to everybody who is seeking asylum here or is here already and is not yet a U.S. citizen. So it's all out war on undocumented immigrants here, non-U.S. citizens here. And it's going to go from there. You know, first they came for the immigrants, then they're going to come from the people supporting the immigrants, then they're going to come from anyone who's a dissident. That's what Trump has laid down in some of his executive orders and his memorandums. And we're just in the first phase of this. The next phase is coming, though, and we should brace ourselves for that. The number to call here, 608-879-8255. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for John and Gordy this morning. They'll be on this afternoon from 2 to 5, so you can catch them there. But please come back. We're going to be talking about some birds, and I want to hear what birds you've been seeing at your feeder. And I'll give you a little advice on how to feed them in the winter. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, Matt Rothschild sitting in for John and Gordy this morning. They'll be on this afternoon from 2 to 5. You can catch them there. I'm here with Dom, and we're talking birds for the next 8 minutes or so. I love that little song that Sean Michael Dargan provided us, so thanks again, Sean. You can call and tell us what you're seeing at your bird feeder at 608-879-8255. We got a text from Kelly in Madison who says, "Hi, Matt, I saw my first purple finch at my feeder last week." Actually, I had a purple finch myself at my feeder over the weekend. A purple finch was famously described by Roger Torrey Peterson, the great bird watcher and bird bookmaker. His book was my Bible as a kid. I was a geeky bird watcher. He described a purple finch as a finch that was dipped in raspberry sauce. So that's a cool one. We've got Matt on the line, I think. Let's hear what Matt's got to say. Hey, Matt.
Morning, guys. I didn't realize it was a bird subject, so I wasn't quite ready for that, but I could change it a bit.
No, birds, politics, whatever's on your mind, Matt.
Okay, well, I was thinking about this immigration stuff and how it relates to the plans that the capitalists, the bankers, the people who are financing these data centers and everything, and how it relates to this technocratic future city idea, a kind of feudalism that Peter Thiel and Musk and these other tech people want. And I think they just feel like they don't need the immigrants anymore. They don't need the cheap labor because they're mass producing robots, right? So I'm thinking it doesn't necessarily have to be all dystopian, but do you think there's a chance that in this future, we could have AI actually release some people from capitalism, where when it comes to preservation and protecting species and caring for our ecosystems and things and birds, that we could create new value out of people's time and put people to work helping biologists and researchers preserve life because they won't have to be working the fields or working the white collar jobs or the data jobs, the things that the AI will replace. Do you think we could build that?
Sure. Kind of future? Sure. Matt from Middleton, thanks for the call. We can build it, but the question is, who's the we and who's calling the shots? This has been the promise of every technological innovation, starting at the Industrial Revolution, that you could make work obsolete or give people a lot of free time that we don't have so we can enjoy our lives more. And certainly the promise exists for that, especially with AI. But who's going to be running AI? And do the people who are running AI really want to take the gun away from people's heads that force us to go to work? Probably not. And so I have my doubts because of how power is arranged in this country. And the technocrats, big tech is really at the center of it. I mean, they're right behind Donald Trump all the way right now. So it's kind of crazy. I've been reading a book about the technocrats and how they are, how they swung over to Trump just over the last couple of years and what that's all about. And it's pretty horrifying. So. And if I can remember the name of that book, I'll get it to you after the break. So you can join the conversation here by calling 608-879-8255. I'm Matt Rothschild, sitting in for John and Gordy here. I wanted to talk about a few tips for bird feeding here in the winter. You know, especially if you're feeding suet to woodpeckers and other birds, birds need suet. They need the fat. They need the protein. In addition just to hanging a cake of suet in one of those bird cages, it's good to cut up the suet cake and throw some of that suet on the ground because a lot of birds like to eat off the ground. Also, those woodpeckers, especially the bigger ones like the hairy woodpecker or the red-bellied woodpecker, they've got big beaks and they're pretty dominant, and they don't want other birds to come up there while they're eating, so they're going to hog it.
Are woodpeckers all around Wisconsin?
Yeah, I had six woodpeckers at my feeders at once on Saturday. Yeah, they're all, you know, there's the downy woodpecker, which is a small one, the hairy. These are black and white woodpeckers, which is bigger. The red-bellied woodpecker, which some people confuse it with a red-headed woodpecker. And there's the flicker, which I had also at my feeder, oddly, because they should be migrating. And then there's the giant pileated woodpecker, which is always cool to see. But yeah, throw bird seed on the ground, too. I encourage people to do that. Throw bird seed on the ground, especially when there's snow. Shovel a little patch where you can throw some bird seed and some suet on the ground. Another hint on the suet front. What I do, because I don't want to feed the squirrels. I don't want the squirrels eating all my suet. I mean, the squirrels have a reason to live, too. But I don't want to eat them eating up the suet. So I have suet that is full of hot pepper. It's called hot pepper suet. You can get it Wild Birds Unlimited at probably Farm and Fleet, too. Squirrels don't like pepper. And so The pepper in the suet deters the squirrels from eating. So if you're sick of that squirrel hanging onto your suet feeder, get a different kind of suet, one that's filled with hot pepper. It's better than those things, those feeders that fling the squirrel off. I don't have that kind of feeder. I know people love that. But, yeah, get some suet that's got some hot pepper in it. Chop it up, throw it on the ground, feed the birds in the winter some extra suet. They need it, and they need black sunflower seed too. And we'll have a lot of interesting birds coming down. We have one bird sound I want to leave you with. A pine grosbeak is coming into Wisconsin right now from Canada. It's a pink and gray bird. It's really cool. It's a big bird. So look out for the pine grosbeak. Here's its song, and we'll be right back with a Starbucks striker right here in the studio. Hey, Matt Rothschild with you this morning. John and Gordy are off this morning, but they're back this afternoon from 2 to 5 on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to John and Gordy in the Morning here on WMDX right here in Madison. The number to call is 608-879-8255. That's 879-8255 if you want to join our conversation. I'm thrilled to have in the studio right now with me Allie Kerr. She's one of the striking workers at Starbucks in Madison. Allie, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Give us a little background. How long you've been working at Starbucks?
I've been working at Starbucks for 10 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I've been at the store at State Street for 8 of those 10 years.
And tell us the background on the strike, because I think people may have read somewhere over the last couple of years, union was formed, and then what's happened?
Yeah. So over the course of the last like 4 or so years, we've established a lot of union stores all around the country. We're looking at about 650 union stores in America. We have 5 union stores in Madison. So we're really repping pretty hard here. Very proud of ourselves. And we were able to do some contract negotiations with Starbucks in 2024. A lot of those talks were really, really positive, or really collaborative. And then we got to what they call economics, which is like pay, benefits, things like that. And the company started stonewalling a little bit. The NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, has decided that the company wasn't bargaining in good faith. That's considered an unfair labor practice, which is part of why we're on strike right now.
And what are the goals of the strike?
We would like the company to come back to the bargaining table in a meaningful way. We don't really want to be on strike. We would rather be working and have a contract. So that's kind of the goal, to get the company back to the table and to like get this done and to resolve those unfair labor practices.
So you all formed a union, but don't have your first contract yet. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
And Starbucks is just being totally recalcitrant and stubborn and illegally not bargaining in good faith.
Unfortunately, yeah.
And so the strike actually started a couple of weeks ago. Is that right?
Yeah.
And how is it going?
So far, so great. I can't speak for other communities, but at least in Madison, we've felt so much community support already. We went out on Black Friday, so we're coming up on a week soon here. And folks have been so kind. It's been really lovely. In terms of movement from the company, haven't heard anything yet, but we're hopeful.
I saw that Francesca Hong joined the picket line. She's running for governor.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's that's actually not the first time that we've worked with Fran, too. So it's really nice to have her support as well.
And are you getting support from other elected officials or people in town that you can mention?
We've had some communication with Mark Pocan's office, but he has not been able to join us yet. He's one that I would love to get out on the picket line at least once or twice, but I know he's a busy guy.
And what about Senator Tammy Baldwin? Have you reached out to her?
I don't have a good contact for her. I should figure that out, though.
Well, we should talk later. I might get you a contact.
Yes, please.
And what is the spirit like of the striking workers? I mean, going on strike is not something you do casually.
Yeah, I think there's like some nervousness, right? There's some excitement. But by and large, the energy is really positive. The people that we've had who have been able to come out and picket have been really, it's just been really exciting. Lots of energy.
So one of the demands is just get your tail back to the bargaining table. And another issue, I imagine, since you mentioned economics, is pay.
Yes.
What is the pay situation?
So right now, an average barista like starting at Starbucks is going to make $15 an hour. And as I'm sure you're aware, in Madison, that's not a tenable wage. You can't rent a one-bedroom apartment and live your life on $15 an hour, even if you're working full-time.
What is rent on a one-bedroom apartment in Madison these days?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it depends.
Over $1,000.
Over $1,000, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you tend to get a studio for like $1,000 at this point.
Yeah.
Depends on where in the city, though.
And $15 an hour for a month is going to get you less than probably $2,000 in your pocket.
After taxes, yeah. Yeah.
And so you're spending more than 50% then of your income on rent, which is the affordability crisis that we're facing in this city, in this state, and in this country.
Exactly, yeah. And we're hoping that Starbucks can kind of do their part and help us bridge that gap, right?
Now, you mentioned that negotiations had been going well, and then all of a sudden they changed. Why was there that change, do you think?
I think the beginning parts of negotiations went really well because we were dealing with a lot of like non-economics, so things like progressive discipline, time and attendance, things like that that don't cost the company any money. So I think it was easier for them to have some wiggle room on those things. But now that we're getting to something that's going to sort of impact the potential bottom line, it's becoming a little harder.
But ideologically, the founder of Starbucks is anti-union and has been outspoken about that, hasn't he?
Yeah, he seems to believe that we don't need a union and that the company treats workers well enough and workers should just take what they're given.
Which is what every owner and manager who faces a union drive says, almost.
Oh, yeah.
And was it hard to sign people up for the union at the beginning?
I think every store goes through a different sort of journey to get there. At my store, it was really easy. We actually had someone from like upper management come in and like threaten people's jobs, said he was going to clean house, wanted to fire a bunch of people who were really important to our store.
And that's illegal too, if you're firing people because they're trying to form a union. It's against the law, but companies do it all the time, and they only get a slap on the wrist once in a great while.
Exactly. There's really no penalty for that. But after that kind of threat came through, people really were invested. Like, oh, we need to save these people's jobs. This is their livelihoods. Between when we started talking about unionizing and when we actually filed, it was, I think, about 10 days.
And what percentage of the workforce signed those union cards or agreed to join the union?
At our store, it was, I want to say it was like 85-90%.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah.
It wasn't even close. So tell me about the preparation for the strike. Was there a strike vote, and how was that taken, and what was that like?
Yep, there was a strike vote, and we were looking at a strike vote nationally to authorize, like, yes, we're going to strike as a campaign, and then locally each store takes a strike vote of their own. So there are some union shops in Madison that are not striking right now because taking a strike vote is such a democratic process. It's really important that everyone is invested. So we have three stores on strike right now: State Street, the Capitol Square, and the Triverton Pike store in Fitchburg. And there's three Madison shops that are not on strike right now.
What was the strike vote like at your State Street store?
Honestly, the biggest issue was like being able to like nail people down to actually just sit down and take the vote. People are very busy, right? We have a store full of students who have like one or more jobs. They're going to classes. But overall, very positive. I mean, people have questions about what that's going to look like and what it means for them. But very positive organizing conversations. Yeah.
Well, that's what it means for them is loss of your wage. And so how long can you sustain going on strike, do you think?
We're hoping to be out for a while. We don't have like a definite end date, but we're hoping we can get the company back to the table before we come back.
You've been there 10 years. What's it been like working at Starbucks for 10 years?
The company has changed a lot over the course of 10 years. Like, there's a reason why I wouldn't have pushed to unionize 10 years ago. It definitely felt like a more positive and supportive workplace. And as the years have gone by, I think, you know, all the changes in leadership, changing in CEOs, and sort of that drive of the drumbeat of capitalism, right? Growth, 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 has really squeezed the workers in a way that didn't used to happen.
Speaking of Allie Kerr, one of the striking Starbucks workers right here in Madison, what do you tell customers who love their latte at Starbucks or in the summer? I've been known to love a Frappuccino. What do you tell them right now? And what do you tell them even after the strike is over? Do they come back?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think a lot of our customers, at least at State Street, are pretty news savvy. So we haven't run into a ton of folks coming in like towards the picket line. But what I would say to customers is like, this is an investment so that we have improved outcomes for everybody. If you have workers that are better paid making your coffee, you're going to have a better time coming in and talking to them in the morning, right? If you have a store that is more staffed, you're going to have a smaller wait time. So hopefully by dealing with this sort of uncomfortable situation right now, we can invest and have like a better future moving forward.
Is your store closed on State Street or are there scab workers there?
As far as I'm aware, we haven't been scabbed yet.
So it's closed?
Yep.
And the other two stores in Madison where there's a strike, those stores are closed as well?
Yes.
So if that's going on at other places where the strike is going on, and how many stores nationwide are on strike?
Oh, I believe we're at about 150 now.
So that's going to pinch the company. I mean, at some point, they're going to feel that pinch.
Definitely.
And they should get back to the bargaining table. It's the proper legal thing to do, but also it's going to be economic for them at some point.
Yeah.
And then what kind of support do the striking workers get from the union to subsidize lost wages?
So we do have like a national strike fund. I'm not going to get into like the nuts and bolts of that, but it makes up some of our wages, not all of them. We also have a local strike fund here in Madison. And like members of the community have been like donating, like even like the cost of your cup of coffee in the morning that you were missing, like that's a helpful donation.
How do people donate? Where can they go to help you?
We have an Instagram account. That's WISSWU. That's WISSWU. And there's like a donation link on one of our posts there for our strike fund.
Is for old folks who aren't on Instagram or anyone else who's listening who's not on Instagram, is there another way that they can send you some money and help you out?
The South Central Federation of Labor is sponsoring a screening of Baristas versus Billionaires next week. I think the 10th and the 11th. We're going to have like a little donation jar there as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, Allie Kerr is a striking worker at the State Street Starbucks store here in Madison. We wish you all the best in your efforts, and thanks so much for coming by the studio and joining us in this conversation. It's just a terrific action. I urge all of our listeners, do not go to Starbucks now while there is a strike on. Do not be a strike breaker.
Nope.
You can get coffee somewhere else. You can also make your own coffee. You don't need to go to Starbucks right now when there's a strike on. So please have some solidarity with Allie and the other striking workers here in Madison and across the country. Any last words for us?
Just thank you so much for your time and for this opportunity. And for folks who are looking for like a union cup of coffee, most Starbucks in town that are closed have a Colectivo super close by, and they are a union shop. They have a union contract.
And that's been a successful union drive. Colectivo, which is based in Milwaukee and has now got a lot of places in Madison, a successful union coffee shop. Hasn't caused the coffee shop to go under. Colectivo's doing fine, even with a union shop.
I've heard they're doing great, even with a union.
Probably better with a union shop. So drink union. Go to Colectivo right now. Don't go to Starbucks. Allie Kerr, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, that was wonderful, wasn't it? I mean, we have actions that you can support right here in Madison, Wisconsin, if you believe in labor rights and human rights and civil rights. Labor rights are crucial to our democracy. We need better laws to protect unionizing, and we need those laws enforced, and they're not being enforced right now. That's why Starbucks can get away with a violation of the National Labor Relations Board and have nothing happen to it. I mean, there are laws on the books, there are penalties on the books, and they don't mean jack if they're not enforced. So we need to enforce and strengthen our labor laws. We need to support our striking workers at Starbucks. Do not go to Starbucks while there is a strike in place. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to the John and Gordy Show. We'll be right back right after the break. So stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you this morning. John and Gordy are off this morning because they're working from 2 to 5 this afternoon. You can catch them then all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm happy to be here with Dom here on WMDX in Madison. The phone number for you to call or text is 608-879-8255. I really liked Allie Kerr from the Starbucks Union here in town. Really letting us know what it's like to be fighting a giant company like Starbucks and trying to make ends meet on the paltry wages they pay over there. And they're not even bargaining in good faith. So that's not a shocker, but it's disgusting. We had a text in the line again, 608-879-8255 from Mark in Prairie du Sac. Speaking of unions, Mark says, when I was a kid in the 60s growing up, in Superior, even the bag boys had a union. And his uncle Ted worked at the National Tea grocery store, and there was a union there. And his mom, his sister, did some of the grocery shopping there. What people forget is in the 1950s, there were about 33% of Americans worked in unions. And that's down to under 10% right now. And here in Wisconsin, unionization got shaved in half by Scott Walker, Act 10. What a disgusting thing that was, dropping a bomb here on the people of Wisconsin. And so I think the union movement is on the rise now, though, and we're seeing that with some of the organizing at Starbucks. We're seeing it with some of the organizing at SEIU. We also got a text from Chuckster, the Chuckster in Racine, who said, Una Paloma Blanca is a great top-of-the-morning bird song and addresses the loss of freedoms. That's very relevant these days. Appreciate the text. Yeah, back to birds. I mean, it's a crazy time because there's right now an odd number of kind of spring and summer birds that have been sighted in Wisconsin, including, of all things, a summer tanager, which is a totally red bird. In Milwaukee, someone else saw a rose-breasted grosbeak. Somewhere in Wisconsin and a Baltimore Oriole, those are usually at our feeders in May and maybe early June and should have gone south a long time ago. But that's what happens sometimes. Birds will hang around. What I was seeing at my feeders, Dom, which was really fun, was, you know, all these downy and hairy woodpeckers, tiny little nuthatches, brown creepers, which is kind of like a nuthatch, a kind of cute brown and white tiny little bird that climbs up and down, and it was eating the suet too. It loved the suet. And then I had two kinds of wrens. I had a Carolina wren and a winter wren at the feeder, and of course a lot of doves and sparrows and chickadees. So I love the winter for the winter birds, because you know they can't find a lot of food in a snowstorm. If you can clear the snow and put some seed down, they'll come a whole bunch of them all in that little space.
You have every bird at your bird feeder. That's what.
Yeah, almost every winter bird. Nothing unusual. Yeah, I'm waiting for the northern finches to come down, like that pine grosbeak you played earlier, or there are other birds. People are seeing red poles, pine siskins. These are little finches. I got Mark on the line. Let's listen to Mark. Mark, all of Civic Media wants to know whether you got your buck yet or not.
No, I didn't get a deer this year, and that's okay. You know, it's just enjoyable getting out in the woods there. On Sunday, when I was walking in to put out the last of some feed for, you know, the birds and for the deer, that I walked up and I came within feet of a ruffed grouse.
Oh, isn't that lucky?
It was just sitting on a downed piece of brush, and you know, nobody must be hunting them anymore. That because this guy was just not concerned at all about seeing me. Then he finally flew off. That
you know, the population mark of ruffed grouse, they have a real ebb and flow.
Yeah, I mean, years ago, I can remember growing up in an earlier deer season. This has got to be, you know, maybe 40 years ago, that I was sitting there in my little stand, and the grouse were feeding on the buds on the aspen that were around. That I watched them for a while.
And when they flap their wings, they make that sound like
a lawnmower starting.
Yeah, that's how you put it last time we talked. A lawnmower starting. That's an incredible sound. I've been in the woods up north where there are a lot of rough grouse, and you hear the bird before you see it. At least that's in my case.
During the trout opener, you know, when I, you know, fishing, you know, hunting up north or fishing up north there, they would always hear them in the springtime. It was interesting driving back yesterday from up by Superior, that crossing the St. Croix River, the river was just covered with the diver ducks, and one big flock of bluebills was right on the river. You could see right from the bridge there, and some of the other rivers that were still open, you know, they were covered with the northern waterfall finally coming down, because it had been so warm up until just the last few days, that when the bottom finally dropped out, that the snow came on down and stuff was starting to freeze over, but the diver ducks were finally coming through.
And you can see some of those diving ducks at Picnic Point here at Lake Mendota. There were a flock of buffleheads there the other day, which is a beautiful duck, actually my wife's favorite. It's a duck with a lot of white on it, white in the face and black and white on the body, and kind of shiny purple too.
And you think it's just black, you know, because I'm a duck hunter, I've gotten, you know, buffleheads in the past, but it's just iridescent. They're you know, I appreciate them more now, just floating around out there, swimming around, but it's not just black, it's just this iridescent with you know, reflections of purple and they're a beautiful duck. I mean,
if you haven't seen one and you're listening, you should look up bufflehead. It's a really gorgeous diving duck. Mark from the SAC, always a pleasure hearing your voice and talking birds with you. I could talk birds all day, but I just want to give you an idea of what's coming up on the show. I'm Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for John and Gordy. At 7:05, we're going to have Joanna Bennett on the show. She is running for the Assembly. And then at 7:30, Pulitzer Prize winner, David Marinus. So quite a fun show. Number to call, 608-879-8255, call or text. And we can continue wherever you want to go. But first, we're going to talk with Joanna Bennett, running for the Assembly, running for Francesca Hong's seat. Though she doesn't own the seat. She's just sitting there right now. You're listening to WMDX. I'm Matt Rothschild here with Dom, and we'll be right back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.